Please take your conversation someplace other than here. Thank you. Okay, with that, we will start off. When we have a quorum, I'll be moving House File 1119, a Hertas bill, a resident definition modified, since we do not have a quorum yet. But we will start with the Hertas bill. Representative Hertas, welcome to the Tax Committee. If you could please present your bill, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you care to move my bill?
I will move your bill when we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you.
And excuse me, Representative Hertas, we do have a quorum. So I will officially call the meeting to order. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of April 8th, 2015. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simonson. Item next, I will move House File 1119. Representative Hertas, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm introducing House File 1119.
Okay.
And in Minnesota, members, we have two types of rules that we use to establish residency here in Minnesota. One is called days present. The other is domicile intent. And Minnesota is one of the few states that uses both of them. Particularly problematic is what I'm hearing anecdotally, and we certainly don't have the data since we've changed the tax structure during the last biennium here in Minnesota, but the fact of the matter is people are leaving the state, and I wish that were not the circumstance, but with regard to changing residency, Minnesota Department of Revenue can use 26 different points to determine what your domicile intent is, despite the fact that you may reside somewhere else in the country. And some of the things on this 26-point list that should be of concern to us is whether or not you own real estate in Minnesota. Another example is what your local union membership is. Another one is the location of other transactions or financial institutions. Another one is the location of your place of worship. Another one is location of business relationships. And also locations of social, fraternal, and athletic organizations or clubs. These are some of the subjective criteria that Department of Revenue will use. Now, I've heard stories of where MDR will drive through in the springtime, visit country clubs or other social clubs and look for out-of-state plates and use that as an example of whether or not to find the ID of those and to determine and start audits on individuals who come back to Minnesota and spend a couple months in the summertime. So this is very problematic. What my bill seeks to do is eliminate entirely domicile intent and use the rule of days present. In addition, the bill also provides the opportunity to not sever your relationship that may have been long-term with your doctor, with your accountant, with other professionals who still reside in Minnesota and provide services to you. It provides an opportunity for you to come back, an exemption, if you will, to come back to Minnesota, for example, to visit Mayo Clinic for medical treatment or cancer treatment that days present for medical treatment would not count as part of your visit in Minnesota and residency. And then lastly, if you flew into Minnesota to attend a business meeting, you'd have to actually stay overnight to count a day as present, or if you had a transfer at the airport, that would not count as days present either. So that's kind of the short summary of the bill, Chair Davids, and those are the key elements of what the bill proposes to do. And we hope to, by allowing this bill, not discourage people who are leaving the state from continuing to use an accountant who lives in Minnesota or a tax advisor or to support their church or union membership. One of the revisions that was made is that charitable contributions have been exempted from scrutiny, but nonetheless, these people that have left are reluctant to even do that. Simply because it seems to indicate a presence in Minnesota. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks and welcome any questions.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. And members, we have House File 1119 before us now. We also have a similar bill, House File 1393, and then House File 837. So we will be taking testimony for people that support it, people that have concerns about it. I don't have anybody signed up for the Hertas bill. I have several folks signed up for 837. Okay, so with that, is there anyone that wishes to testify specifically to the Hertas bill? In favor of, with concerns thereof? Does the department wish to testify on this, or do you want to kind of wrap it up after the third bill?
That'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, whatever the department would like to do, we'll make that work. Okay, so questions for members for the Hertas bill, Representative Slocum?
I'm here.
Representative Loeffler. I'm so glad you're here today.
I'm, you know, thank you, yes. Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I'm always kind of amazed at how I want everybody to kind of reward other relationships, but not the relationship with the state that educated their kids and the roads that they drive on when they're here for those 183 or 195 or however many days they kind of visit here, but they shouldn't contribute. But this one, Representative Hertas, it looks to me like you've created one of the really big loopholes of all of this, because you have to be in the state substantially all of a calendar day, including an overnight stay. So does that mean that if you're counting your days and you're worried, you really want to be a Minnesotan, but you don't want to pay Minnesotan taxes, so you can just, like, drive over to Wisconsin for a beer, and then you can say, I wasn't in Minnesota substantially all of the day, and, you know, you got your receipt from the bar in Wisconsin or North Dakota, or, you know, I mean, what's the substantially all of a day concept, and how are we going to audit that?
Thank you, Chair Davids. Representative Loeffler, no, you have to actually stay overnight. You have to spend an overnight stay for that day to count.
Well, Mr. Chair, actually, as I read it, you must be present substantially all of a day, including an overnight. So if you spent the day watching the Packers and say, or something else, spending money outside of Minnesota, I don't think you make the test, because even if you slept here, was it substantially all of the day, including a night? And do we really need to get to this level of game playing to avoid contributing to the state that people have as their home part of the year?
Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, actually, you read it very clearly. Substantially all of the day, including overnight, is what's required to count it as a day.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's going to be some people who have a lot of fun trying to figure out how to keep their calendars.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Other questions for members? Okay, with that.
And
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And also in the bill, there's an affidavit that's required to be signed that is prescribed by the commissioner that would remain on in file as part of this bill. The language is clear in that, and it is prescriptive in a manner that's acceptable to the department. So with that, thank you, and I'll conclude.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. I'll renew my motion to the House file 1119 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Hertas.
Thank you.
Item next, we will go to is Representative McDonald in? Well, does he have anything?
Yeah.
Oh, Representative Smith, we'll hear your bill next. Representative Smith, if you could please join us.
Oh, no. Mr. Chair, I brought treats for the committee.
Thank you very much.
Oh, he knows to start the chair.
Oh, my.
We're just friends, buddy.
I think we'll just take those.
One advice.
we will share, but we will get the bill going here first. I've been in consultation with Chair Lencheski, and this bill probably should just go to the floor, but let's hear it, and we'll decide what we want to do. I announced yesterday that it's my intention to have House Bill 1972. The revised bill go to the floor, but I didn't announce this one. If there's any problem with that, we'll just hold it in the committee and probably act on it next week sometime. So we'll see what the committee members want to do. on House File 1901. So I'll move House File 1901. Are there any amendments? Seeing no amendments. Welcome to the committee, sir. You've done very well with your bill, looks like. So with that, I will move House File 1901, and it will be the General Register at this time unless we have some issues with that. So we're going to get those going around. Please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1901 is a bill that modifies the default rule that determines which heirs of an estate tax are responsible for paying the federal estate tax and the Minnesota estate tax. This will, if the will or trust documents do not state specifically otherwise. This is revenue neutral, and I have Mr. Jason Schuler with us to talk about some more specifics of the bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jason Schuler, and I'm a member of the Minnesota State Bar Probate and Trust Association.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. First of all, I'll be discussing something called a Q-tip trust. And a Q-tip trust is something that is commonly used in estate planning for situations of blended marriages. And what it does is it allows a settlor or a creator of a trust to hold assets in trust that will benefit the surviving spouse. And then when the surviving spouse passes away, those assets are typically passed on to his or her children from a first marriage. Now, in certain situations, when a surviving spouse is a beneficiary of a Q-tip trust, that surviving spouse's estate can be liable for a sizable amount of estate taxes that would not be liable for had they not been a beneficiary of the Q-tip trust. And so what this bill will do is mirror the federal law as a default rule that, in the example that I've given, the entire estate liability would be paid by the Q-tip trust rather than the estate of the surviving spouse. So as an example, let's say that a grantor creates a trust that has $5 million in it, and the surviving spouse has $1 million in her own name. When she passes away, if she had not been a beneficiary of the Q-tip trust, no estate tax would be owed from her estate. But because she is a beneficiary of this Q-tip trust, estate taxes would be owed. So the way that it currently is drafted, 5/6 of the tax would be due from the Q-tip trust and 1/6 from the estate of the surviving spouse. So the beneficiaries of the surviving spouse, her children from a prior marriage, would get less than the $1 million in her estate. Our feeling is that taxpayers would prefer to have all the taxes apportioned to the Q-tip trust and not the, the surviving spouse's estate.
Thank you. Is there, and again, members, this one I'm not, you know, it does say tax in here, but it's not really in any section. I can find this within our jurisdiction, Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this really is a probate and trust bill, not a tax bill. It's sort of creating, as the testifier said, what the sort of the presumption of intent is when the decedent did not explicitly express that. When these original provisions were enacted, they did not go through the tax committee. So, it does affect who pays or whose inheritance gets reduced by the taxes. So in that sense, it involves taxes, but it really is a probate and trust matter.
Chair Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would agree with that, what Mr. Michael just said. In fact, I raised my hand to ask him to sort of give the committee some context for how these have been addressed in the past. And you know, I think I'm comfortable having heard from you today that you were thinking about having to go to the General Register. I'm comfortable with that as long as there's sort of the agreement that, you know, everybody is going to play nice, I guess.
That's how we do it here. Sometimes. I agree with you 100%. Okay, with that, is there anyone in the audience that really even cares about this bill? I mean, I care about it deeply, of course, because we got some delicious treats out of the deal. But with that being said, is there anyone who wishes to testify in support of this fine piece of legislation? Anyone that wishes to testify with concerns thereof? Does the department wish to testify? No? Okay. Okay, with that, any other questions for members? Then I will renew my motion that House File 1901 be sent to the General Register. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. You're off to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Smith, and thank you for the treats.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We love treats.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you to the testifier. Okay, to Mr. Schuler. Let's go item next, since we have, let's go to House File 1001, Chairman Dean. Then it's my intention to go to House File 1972, Schumacher, then we'll pick up on the resident definition, McDonald and Davids, that are left here. Chairman Dean, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 1001, and that would be to be laid over for possible inclusion. First of all, before we get going with Chairman's presentation of the bill, is there anyone in the audience wish to testify on behalf of this bill in support of, with concerns on the bill? Does the department wish to testify?
Yeah, but we'll do this
At the end of the day kind of thing? Or at the end of the... Okay, at the end of the bill presentation. Okay, welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate your time this morning, and I will be very brief. This bill was brought to me by a constituent, and the constituent's family members, some of whom are moving to Florida and maintain a home in Minnesota and in Florida. And one of the things that we're very concerned about is that the people who are in Florida or Texas or Arizona or many of the places that people go to stay warm and be comfortable. We would like them to come back to Minnesota to spend money and spend time with their families and keep our economy going here in Minnesota. One of the things that was troubling to me when I learned about this was that there's a group of folks down in Collier County in Florida who get together, and they are very concerned about Minnesota Department of Revenue coming after them, and there's all this points tests that I learned about that you all learn about and know about because you're on the tax committee that I learned about through my constituent. They're very frightened of the Department of Revenue coming after them, and there's all of these things that they do that I think that they shouldn't have to do just to come back to Minnesota and spend time with their grandkids and spend money in our great state. And one of the things that really took it out of the realm of this is interesting or troubling to this is something I need to worry about and should be concerned about was I was talking with a woman, and she lives in my district, and she says, you know, we have to get our financial work done in Florida. We have our accountant. We've got this and that. They continue to contribute money and stay involved in Minnesota, but they were told that they have to move everything down there. And she said, I just hope Bill's cancer doesn't come back, because I want to be able to come back and get chemotherapy and get treatment in Minnesota, and those days will count against us when we're being told that we have to move our doctor to Florida, and we can't come back to Minnesota to get health care. So that's when I got interested enough, and I started looking into this and said, you know, if people move to Florida, that they should be able to come back to Minnesota to take advantage of the best health care in the world, and our facilities, as you all know, are second to none, and we want to be able to make sure that people continue to do that and that our hospitals, doctors and researchers continue to be able to treat people, even if they do happen to move out of state for more than half of the year. So that's what this bill does. It sets out the exception for the medical care that doesn't count against your days. You all understand this a lot better than I do with how these exceptions work and when you count days and when you don't. But that's the reason for the bill on behalf of a constituent in my district. I think it's a good idea. I've talked to the Hospitals Association and folks around the state, and they seem to think it's a good idea too. So happy to answer any questions as best I can, and also ask for your support.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Questions for members? To the department, Mr. Cummings, did you want to make some comments after we've heard all the residency type bills, or specifically to this one?
Yes, Mr. Chair. At the end, I think we'll talk about residency in general.
Okay. Okay. So, other questions? Any questions from members? Hearing none, I will move that House File 1001 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Dean. Okay. Item next, I'll move House File 1972, Chairman Schumacher. This is when I announced yesterday that it'd be my intention to pass this to the House floor unless there's objection from members, because anytime things have to do with taxes, we know that on the House floor there can be some skullduggery, tomfoolery, and shenanigans pulled, and so we want to be careful with that. So welcome to the committee, sir. First of all, before we get into testimony, I will ask, first of all, is there anyone else other than folks that are at the table which testify on behalf of this bill?
They're dealing with residents.
With concerns thereof? The department want to talk about the revisions bill today?
No.
Okay. It's pretty exciting stuff. I stayed up all and I read through all this, and I was pretty interested. Chair Schumacher, to your bill.
Thank you.
I will move 1972.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you are exceptionally affable and gregarious today, I have to say, Mr. Chair.
I was once the club president, too. Yes, yes.
The bill in front of us, the revisor's bill, most of it is just fixing cross-references and grammatical errors, but we brought it in front of the tax committee today to answer any questions that the committee may have on the references to taxes, and with that I have people who are very knowledgeable in this area with me.
Could you please state your name and who represents the record, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. I'm Michelle Timmons, the revisor of statutes, and here with me today is also Jeff Case, the assistant deputy revisor for drafting, who is the person who took the lead on putting the revisor's bill together this year. I just want to state briefly that this is the annual revisor's cleanup bill, the one that corrects errors from past sessions. There's nothing in here that relates to anything the legislature did during this session. There is typically a bill on that, but that will come much later in the session. So the process for this bill is that the revisor attorneys work together during the interim, and many of these errors come to light during our editing process as we're preparing to publish the Minnesota statutes. And then, after the bill is prepared, we make sure that staff of House Research and Senate Counsel also review the bill, so we have lots of pairs of eyes looking at it. And with that brief testimony, I think we'd answer any questions you have.
Ms. Timmons, welcome to the committee. First of all, are there any specific pages specifically the tax committee should be looking at?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, I believe there are three tax-related provisions, sections 63, 64, and 65, which I guess are pages 59, 60, and 61 and 2.
Could you briefly explain specifically what you're doing?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think on section 63 is simply a cross-reference error where clause 30 was previously referenced and it should be 29. In section 64, there is similarly a cross-reference error to paragraph M that is no longer necessary. And then section 5 is really one where a word net is added because it was omitted originally when amendments were made to that section, and I think when you look at it in context, that word needs to be there for clarity, and perhaps Mr. Michael could comment on that one.
Mr. Michael, are we talking about page 61, 61.3?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. If you look down, the reason why they're adding that word is because combined net receipts is a defined term in the statute, and so it was just inadvertently omitted, and so that makes it clear that what's intended is the defined term.
Okay, any other? Chair Lanchesky?
Can I ask, Mr. Chair, section 82, 3, 4.
What page is this?
Starting on page 66.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Timmons?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There are also some provisions that relate to local government aid that may be of interest to the committee. I believe that starts on page 66 at section 79 and goes through section 93. On page 72. And I think when you look at the vast majority of those, the language that is stricken is, it's pretty obvious why we're striking the language, because it relates to very specific prior years, and so it's not ongoing in the continuing statutes.
Okay. Chair Lanchesky? Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Timmons, I'm looking at page 82, the health care payment and pricing reform data. I don't recall this in civil law, but I'm trying to determine that lines 8221 through 8223, the implications for the existing requirements for HMO's disclosure of pricing data in light of the Timber J bill we passed last year. How does this impact that?
Ms. Timmons?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, this Article 2 really contains non-substantive cross-references. I know you, Representative Lesh, you're well aware of the structure of Chapter 13, in that there are a number of provisions that state primary data practices provisions, and then there are quite a few sections that talk about data classifications that are coded elsewhere in these statutes. And so this is merely a cross-reference to provisions in 62U.04 subdivision 5 paragraph C, and it's not substantive there in Chapter 13. It's merely a finding aid.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair and Ms. Timmons, thank you for that. What my concern is, this 62U.04 is a pretty long section of statute, and it looks like under subdivision 5 it appears to be classifying this now as non-public, and I just want to make sure it's not inconsistent with anything we've done already. If I have your assurance, that's fine. I'll look it up more later.
Ms. Manzi, to that point, you want to clarify that? You don't want to? Okay.
I mean, I could say something.
Could you?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I suspect, and Ms. Timmons can confirm this, that what happened is that the legislature provided for various kinds of data to be non-public in the substantive chapters of law that deal with a particular subject area, and neglected to add in the corresponding provision in Chapter 13, which deals specifically with data. So I think what you would find in 62U.04 subdivision 5 paragraph C is language that makes this particular kind of data non-public. And what the revisers bill is doing here is simply putting that same statement that it's non-public into Chapter 13, which is the chapter about data and whether it's public or non-public.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that clarification. And just for the record, I fully expect some sneakiness on this provision as we approach the June deadline for the disclosure of the HMO data. And so I just want to make sure that Not that the revisor's bill would ever do that. You know, it's just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me, Mr. Chair, as you understand. Okay?
I understand it very well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have my assurance, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. And again, just because this may go to the House floor if we vote to do that, everything is a work in progress, as you know. What are you doing, Ms. Timmons, on page 83, section 9? With bullion coin dealers. Are we giving convicted felons a tax break here?
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I can ask Mr. Case to answer this one.
Mr. Case, what are we doing?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is a similar provision. It's another non-substantive cross-reference. This is another area of the law where the revisor is charged to flag things and put them in the chapter. This relates to collateral sanctions. And so there's nothing substantive being done here. It's simply consistent with other provisions in Chapter 609B relating to collateral sanctions. I'm not really an expert on criminal law or collateral sanctions, but it is similar to what is going on in the data practices stuff. It's just a reference. It's pointing users to another place in statutes that they should be aware of. It's not creating anything new here, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Could you please state your name for the record? I don't know.
Jeff Case, Revisor of Statutes. Thanks.
Thanks, Mr. Case. With residency. Okay, other questions on the tax portions of the revised bill? If not, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 1972 be passed with the general register. Any further discussion from members? Chairman Chesney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, maybe you know, is this another vehicle intention for, not for taxes maybe, but for something else?
Well, Chair Lincheski, this is not a vehicle bill for me. I'm doing quite well on vehicle bills right now.
Well, you haven't sent the policy and technical bills out yet, so I think you've only got two vehicles out there so far.
So far.
I thought you wanted six.
So far.
No, it's three.
Five or six.
But
five or
got
six.
Work to do.
But maybe I might use, this is not intended.
Okay.
Not the revisor's bill. We've got to leave that alone.
Mr. Chair, the reason I ask, you know that the revisor's bill is, the Senate has used it for incredible things, like adding inflation in the middle of the night. So I just, we had a lot of debate at the beginning of 2 years ago about the Senate attempting to characterize things in the revisor's bill as mistakes. So, I just hope you and Speaker Dowd will keep a good eye on what happens in the other body with the revisor's bill.
And I appreciate that. Of course, the situation is fluid, but it is not my intention at this point to do anything with this other than pass a fine piece of legislation here by Chair Schumacher. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's a question for Representative Schumacher. My recollection in the past is that the revisor bill has been split into the jurisdictions of the different committees and sent off for their review to decide whether or not these really were technical, non-controversial, and then they were reassembled. And here we have the tax committee looking at the tax portions to make sure they're non-substantive and not an issue, but it doesn't appear that this bill went through the other committees. Were there parallel bills that did go to the other committees? I see some provisions I don't see coming through some of the policy committees I'm on.
Ms. Timmons?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, the procedure you're describing is the one that relates to the end of session corrections bill, because that one may correct substantive matters, and so there's a special procedure there to go to whatever committees or conference committees with subject matter jurisdiction. This is the first revisor's bill. This is the one that contains non-substantive cleanup matters from past sessions. And so it's actually, somewhat unusual. I think that typically it just goes through civil law and then straight to the floor. That's been typically the process in the past in the House. But this year, for an abundance of caution, it was brought to the Tax Committee for your review.
Representative Loeffler.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a couple things I just want to, I'll follow up on offline.
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Any other questions for members? With that, I'll renew my motion. Representative Wills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on page 63 in the context of section 68 and 69 where the language was added for of $15, and I was just seeking some clarification on if current statute already defines the amount of the fee, and this is just putting it in this location as well, if you could clarify.
Ms. Timmons, page 63, line 63.24.
Let's see. Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wills. That is section, looks like 68 and 69. And the explanation that we've written here. This is one where the fee was put in the session law, and in the session law only. And so there were concerns from members of the public and citizens trying to find out what the fee is, that the fee was not stated in statute. And so that's essentially what we're doing here. We're making the statute conform to the session law.
Representative Wills? Thank you. Any other questions for members? I'll renew my motion that House File 1972 be recommended, be passed, be referred to the General Register. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go now to House File 837. And members, this room is needed at a quarter to, so it's my intention wherever we're at about 11:40. If we're, we might be done before that, but at 11:40 we'll be adjourning for the day, and we can pick up whatever we don't get to next week. So it looks to me like we just have 837 and 1393. Representative McDonald. Okay, let's go with House File 837, and I'll take the bill from here. I'll move House File 837. Chair Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as you're getting ready to do that, off subject, our caucus has, or our side of the aisle has caucus at 11:15. I'm intending to stay here till the end, but I know some of our members will leave. But I just want to ask you, you know, I know we're going to finish these bills today, but you said, you know, if we don't finish, we'll get to it next week. What can you give us a little outline to what the plan is next week and the next week? When is, for example, when is Representative Draskowski's division report due? When will it come back here? What should we be looking for in the next few weeks, sir?
Oh, thank you, Chair Lincheski. I don't know if those times have been set. I'll let Chair Draskowski speak to that. But next week's going to be very, very fluid. I would like to have three meetings, but on, you know, on Wednesday we're not. I don't think we don't know if we've set the floor time yet, and so there's some different things going on. So please watch for emails from Mr. Rubis to let you know what bills are up. We're trying to get all the bills that have had requests done. I'm not sure if we'll accomplish that entire goal, but that's my intention. Chair Draskowski, any update on property tax division?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lincheski. Not other than what you stated, Mr. Chair. We're trying to get through our last flurry of bills, and as soon as we get through those, we can assemble the report. But at this point, all we know is it's soon.
Chair Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Draskowski. And Mr. Chair, you know, just a few other things, you know, because, I mean, we know we're down to next week. We're down to 5 weeks. So just trying to, you know, and you obviously need time to get to conference committee and negotiate. So somewhere in between there, you have to finish these bills off. And I just a couple other questions is, have you, and I'd asked you this earlier this year, do you intend for the transportation bill to come through the committee, carry tax provisions, and then it would go on its way? Or do you intend to strip the transportation bill of any tax provisions? Because I know you're looking at tax dedications. And then contain them in the omnibus tax bill? Have you made that decision on that item?
Thank you for the question. It's my intention to take everything out of the omnibus bills, whatever area it is, to take them out and leave them here. That's my intention, unless I hear from the lower floor of me that things are going to change. That'd be my intention. I don't want tax provisions in the other omnibus bills. That can lead to much heartburn. And so that'd be my intention. And if anything changes, I'll let you know right away. And also the other issue is, as soon as we get some dates for the property tax division report and the tax bill itself, I want to get that out and published as soon as possible and give you as much time as I can so that you can do what you need to do, whether it be amendments or studying the bill or whatever. You may just not have any amendments and just say, hey, this is a good bill, and or maybe not. So we'll just see. That's up to you on that. Chairman Chesney.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking this time. I know you want to get through your agenda, but you know, I just think as people head home for the weekend, I mean, you and I are in Ways and Means, and we'll be here tomorrow, but some members will leave today, and some of our members will actually go to caucus here shortly. So just as we think about the tax committee wrapping up its work for the year, so can you also, in the past, the K-12 bill is frequently full of levies, and those are property tax increases, and you know, usually both sides of the aisle send that bill through the tax committee and goes through the same exercise. Would you strip any levies in the K-12 omnibus bill and keep it here, or would you send that on its own? Has that decision been made?
That decision has not been made. I'm advocating for, as it comes through here, we have an amendment to pull the tax issues out. I can't guarantee that'll happen on all the levy things, because some of the issues are kind of, does it belong here, doesn't it belong here? And of mm-hmm. course, my theory is that everything belongs here. But that hasn't been determined yet, but there have been discussions, and I've been advocating that if it has to do with property tax and any of the other committees, that it comes here. And I know there'll be some property tax issues in the K-12 bill. There'll be some in transportation because of how the plan funds things with the tax on auto parts and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be very aggressive on getting those things here. But I don't think... unless the leadership corner tells me differently, I want them here.
Okay, and thank you, Mr.
Chair. Yeah, Chairman
Chesky. And then just one other item, just while I'm thinking about it, is, you know, I look at both caucuses when they put out their top 5 bills or 10 bills. Those tend to be their agenda for the year, and I've mentioned this before, that some of those bills have tax provisions, yet we have not heard them. So House File 2, for example, has a lot of tax provisions, yet that bill has not. Is it 2 or 1? I can't remember where the business tax is. House Bill 1. That has not yet been here, and I'm, you know, so kind of wondering how that's working. But similarly, I know I heard Representative Mack at a press conference or something some time ago, or it was on the radio, I can't remember, talking about that a top priority for that committee is going to be to provide a tax credit, a state tax credit, for getting off of the Obamacare. And, of course, that has not been here yet either. And I guess the question is the HHS omnibus bill then also coming through the tax committee, or will you just carry that provision here?
Well, those provisions will need to come through the tax committee. Okay. I don't know if it's been determined yet. I don't think that should be staying in the HHS bill. I don't. If I'm a chair of a division, a finance division, I don't want that stuff in my bill because I mm-hmm. can't imagine what could happen. Well, I can't imagine what could happen. And so that's my intention. And like I said, if my intention is I'm not able to follow through with it, you'll be the first to know, because I want to be protective of the jurisdiction of this committee. Chairman Chesney.
Again, and, you know, so thank you for that. And I know I've heard people talking about maybe they're going to want to work on the provider tax and the HHS committee, which, of course, would also be this committee. And I'm glad to hear you say that, you know, you want to protect the purview of this committee, and I agree with you. I'm just trying to think through then, so members should expect, you know, extra meetings. All those omnibus bills have to get through Ways and Means by 2 weeks from tomorrow is the rule in the House. So all omnibus bills are due April 24th. So, you know, I'm just assuming as we see all those omnibus bills come through, of course, amendments are in order, and, you know, just trying to think through workload for the minority. Just any insights you can give us as members decide, you know, if they should spend weekends here, if they're, you know, rural members, if they should stop scheduling, you know, district. And those of us who live in the metro, you know, by both sides of the aisle, we know we have meetings most nights in our district. So just as you learn that, if Mr. Rubis or you can pass that along to us, it would just be really helpful.
We certainly will. And Chairman Chesky, as you know, I don't like to go past the meeting time as a rule, but we will be probably next week and into the next couple weeks, because we're going to be having omnibus bills coming through. We are going to, and then when we, it's my intention then when we get the bill drafted, we'll do the property tax report, and then that'll be put in the omnibus bill, and I figure on taking quite a bit of time for public testimony, and then whatever time we need for marking the bill up. Well, I'll mark the bill up, but you'll try to unmark it up. and so we'll have, I don't want to cut anybody off from any amendment or discussion. Those days we'll be looking for rooms probably from 7 to midnight type thing. I don't want to abuse this committee as far as time for the members, but it's not my intention. It's not my intention to be doing any weekends. at this point, now, conference committee, of course, is a 24/7, who was ever on the conference committee. So with that being said, we will, just so the committee knows, we will be spending quite a bit of time in tax committee the next couple of weeks, but I want to respect your time, but I also want to respect the fact that when you have amendments, I don't want to be cutting off debate. That's the worst thing, in my mind, a chair can do. So we want to have a full debate on your ideas and on the bill itself.
Thank you.
Representative Earhart and Davenport. Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, is the property tax division meeting on a regular basis, or once a week, or twice a week, or on a
chair sporadic,
or what?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, we've been meeting weekly up until this week, and we've got five scheduled different meeting times this week in order to get our flurry of bills through in the end.
Chair Earhart.
No, I was just curious if it was published. I thought maybe they were having secret meetings somewhere.
The dark of night and smoke-filled room,
yes,
high-priced
right.
Lobbyists is what I like to do. But Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chair, and a good meal involved?
And a good meal.
And a good
that
meal.
I pay for.
Of course. Well, yes. There's never any question about that. As I hear the discussion, I think there's some anxiety rising in the room, both about speed of how quickly things are going to happen here and the complications of multiple committee hearings potentially going on at the same time and the like. And I guess my question to Chair Drazkowski is, since we haven't seen the division report yet, and that's fine, what assurances can you give the public that there'll be at least 24 hours from the time you walk through the bill in public in committee and the time that we actually vote on the bill to give the public time to review, ask questions, the minority opportunity to see the bill, and then try to unmark it?
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, it's my intention to provide as much time in each of those areas as we can, and that is really dependent upon how quickly we can get done with disposing of the bills that we have before us, which we've got some scheduled for this week. There's mm-hmm. a few others that we're looking at, and then we can get going. And so the sooner we get it done, the quicker we can get at it and leave more time, given the time schedule that is really dictated, as Representative Lencheski said, in the rules.
Chair Depp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want the public to have the opportunity to see things before we vote on them. Not only should we read them before we vote on them, but the public should know what's in them before we vote on them as well. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney. As we have all session, we will provide as much notice as we can, and not only as much as customary around here, but even more if we can.
Sure. Very good. Thank you. Thank you both.
Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, you have a budget, target, I assume.
Yes, we do.
Is the division in your target, or they have their own, or how is that working?
That's being worked on as we speak. There's nothing I'm aware of that's been completely finalized. But as soon as we have things locked down, it's my intention to have, we're basically looking at $2 billion on the relief side. We'll have a percentage, so much we're looking at for property tax, so much for full committee. And that hasn't been finalized yet. There's been discussions that we've had, but we're not quite ready to
Thank
announce
you.
That yet. Any other questions? Okay, what I'd like to do is we have House File E37, but you know what? I think I'm going to move House File 1393 for possible inclusion, and I'd like staff Basically, to explain what that does, maybe a few differences from the Hertas bill, or if they're exactly the same, we don't need to. I don't think we need to hear them again. Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there isn't any overlap actually between House File 1393 and Representative Hertas's bill. What House File 1393 does is there are two tests that can be used to determine whether an individual is a resident for purposes of Minnesota individual income tax. There's the domicile test that's based on where the individual intends to make their permanent home. There's also what's generally referred to as the statutory residency test that was enacted in the late 1980s. That's an alternative way to qualify somebody as a resident. And that test basically looks at if someone has a domicile in Minnesota, or has an abode in Minnesota, excuse me, which means they have a home, they either own a home or rent a home in Minnesota, and they're physically present in Minnesota for more than one half of the tax year, then they automatically become a Minnesota resident without regard to where they intend to make their permanent home. And what House File 1393 does is it changes that one-half test, which would normally be 183 days or more, to 200 days. So it's essentially adding 17 more days onto that statutory residency test. So that's all that House File 1393 does.
Okay, anyone in the audience wish to testify on behalf of 1393 with concerns? And I believe we'll hear from the department after my bill, A37. Questions for members? Okay, I will move that House File 1393. Who? Oh, Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess the author is not here of that bill.
Right.
Because I was wondering, what is he gaining by 17 days, or what's the point? But if he's not here,
okay, we will hold this over because, in fairness to the author and members, we will be able to address that question to him. If he doesn't come, we'll just bring this one over into next week. Good. Thank you for that. Okay, House File 837. I believe we have the CPA Society, the Bankers Association would like to come out and testify on that, and is the insurance agents would like to testify, if you want to come down. So I will move House File 837. And again, if Representative McDonald doesn't show up, we'll just carry that one over. And I do want to respect caucus time for the DFL as soon as we can, but we'll get some brief testimony as to why this is probably the finest piece of legislation these folks have ever seen in their lives. So, Mr. Witt, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please. Or you want to go? Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gino Fragnito, and I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society and part of a larger group of associations that have worked on this residency issue since the discussions back in 2014 with the Tax Conference Committee. I'd like to thank Representative Davids and the co-sponsors for bringing this legislation forward. But I want to start by saying that this legislation is not a result of an action by the Department of Revenue, but it's necessary because of two Supreme Court cases that cited the hiring of Minnesota professionals as a factor in determining residency. These cases are now being used to market against those professionals, which is particularly harmful to smaller businesses in Minnesota, those businesses that don't have the opportunity or the option to set up an office in another state to service those clients. Those that are involved in the discussions, the groups that are included include the CPAs, the Bar Association, the Bankers Association, Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents Association, the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors of Minnesota, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Business Partnership, the Independent Community Bankers, and the Minnesota Credit Union Network. And many of those organizations are here also if there are questions in particular to their individual sections.
Mr. Fragnito, did you say that the bankers and the credit unions are supporting something together?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they've both been in the room in the discussion and in support of the provisions in this bill.
We have peace in the valley.
On this particular provision, yes.
That's where that phrase came from, members. Okay, please continue.
So in closing, Mr. Chair, professionals in other states are using the 2013 Maurer and Larson cases as marketing tools, many times resorting to scare tactics against Minnesota-based professionals, and we believe that our laws should not discriminate against hiring Minnesota professionals, and this bill would correct that problem. Thank you.
So, Mr. Fragner, you're saying if someone is living down in Florida, they're saying get rid of your cut all ties to Minnesota CPAs, financial planners, all those folks, otherwise you'd be pulled back in and be considered Minnesota resident?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I've seen websites from Florida-based attorneys who actually have it on their website that you want to hire professionals in Florida and get rid of your Minnesota-based advisors.
Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Witt, President and CEO of the Minnesota Bankers Association. We also support this bill. Similar issue with the banking situation. Under modern banking, with internet banking, telephone banking, mobile banking, direct deposits, you really can bank from anywhere. The current rules basically require people to sever those ties, and we strongly support allowing people to maintain their banking relationships here in Minnesota. And yes, we are in full agreement with the credit unions on this particular issue. As you can imagine, there would be other issues related to taxation where we do not see eye to eye.
Let's just work on this one today.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Fragnino.
Mr. Chair, if I could add one more comment. I just want to say that we have worked with the department and want to thank them for their input and discussions along the way, and either individually or collectively, we've talked about the different issues in this bill, and tax attorneys have concluded that administrative action will not address this issue and that a statute change is, in fact, needed to correct the problem.
Okay, thank you. Now, Mr. Spizzetto, if you could please join us. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of House File 837 or with concerns? Okay, I realize there's a DFL caucus in a few minutes here. I would like to get this on the record. Members, if you go to caucus, we are not voting on anything today, so you wouldn't be missing your votes if you want to go to caucus. And please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dominic Spizzetto, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents and also the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors. These are people who are financial advisors, financial planners, life insurance salespersons, who work very closely with Minnesotans to develop their financial needs, particularly as they go into retirement. And what we're seeing now is this trusted relationship, this very personal relationship, is being tested by our colleagues in other states who are indicating that they should take their business and come to them for fear of retaliation through the Department of Revenue considering their residency. And it, in many cases, these people have already left Minnesota. They are there. They're in these states. But the relationship with their advisor continues because we have their products, their retirement planning products, their life insurance, long-term care insurance, other things. And we think it's really problematic to have those people feel, and not necessarily justifiably, that they have to go move their business to a financial advisor in that state. In fact, we're penalizing our Minnesota advisors because we are losing business. We are here, we are professionals here, we pay taxes here, and we're actually losing business to our colleagues in other states because of this misunderstanding, I'd like to think, between the industries. So we're very supportive of getting a statutory change that our members can then use to tell their clients that the legislature has looked at this issue. You can continue your trusted relationship with your financial advisor and not be penalized in any way or work in fear that this will turn into retaliation on your residency requirement. So we're here to support the legislation, and I thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Spizzetto. Before we go to the department for their thoughts on this bill, are there any questions for Mr. Witt, Fragnito, or Spizzetto for members? Chair Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question, and I don't know what the Department of Revenue is going to say about this, but I, at the risk of offending everybody in the room, I do just want to point out a couple things, and I think, you know, you're not authoring a bill, Mr. Chair, because you don't want to make changes, and you know, I think the Senate does too, and this did come up, as was said at the end of last session, and you know, one of the reasons we didn't work on it is because I opposed changing it, and I continue to oppose it. And I'd just like members to think about it, even though I understand that it's probably going to pass. There's this belief that these 26 factors require certain things, and it's not accurate. And people continue to say that, both legislators and in public testimony, that if you do an activity, that means you're a Minnesotan for tax purposes in the domicile factor. And that is absolutely not the law. The law is that our Department of Revenue can look at these factors. They do not trigger residency. They do not trigger having to pay taxes. They simply say these are tools the Department of Revenue can look at. And by the way, that's been the law since the law was enacted, which I think is in the 80s. So this is nothing new. It says, when we send out, auditors to try to figure this out, here's some things people can look at, none of which require you to change. Nothing makes anything automatic. Just says the department can go look at it. And so, we're hearing people say things like, and I've heard this for a number of years, that these factors mean that if you have an accountant here, then you're an automatic a Minnesotan for tax purposes. It's not accurate. That's not the law. Or this factor says if you use insurance here, then you're automatically a Minnesotan for tax purposes. That's actually not true. And so I hope the Department of Revenue will correct me if I'm wrong, but that's how I understand the law. I don't see the value in why we want to help non-Minnesotans avoid paying tax to us. I mean, these aren't our constituents. They're non-Minnesotans. And, we could pass a bill to exempt the income tax and get rid of the income tax because Florida has better weather than we do and Texas has better weather than we do. Or we could reduce the state sales tax because Florida has a lower state sales tax. I mean, if the whole goal here is to make it comparable to another place, then there's a lot more we can do than domicile factors. But I just think people should think about what you're doing here. You're making it easier for people to avoid paying taxes to Minnesotans who are not Minnesotans. And if that's what people want to do, then I guess that's what we're going to pass this year. But, we've gone in a three-year period from people talking about it's a burden for some areas to, if you use my accountant, you changed your tax liability. I guess we'll hear what the department says, but Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi to answer if the current law requires that when you participate in these activities, that triggers a change in definition for residency and your tax liability.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, members of the committee, the basic test, the domicile test, is an intent test. So the test is, where do you intend to make your permanent home? That determines whether you're a resident of Minnesota. The department back in the early 1980s is a way to, and of course the problem the department has and the courts have is determining intent. You can't objectively know what intent is. So you're stuck with the difficulty of saying, well, let's look at evidence of intent. And so the department back in 1982 or 83 promulgated an administrative rule that lays out these 26 factors that delineate the kinds of things that the department can look at as in evidence of what the individual's intent is as to where their permanent home is. And so those 26 factors are simply external, extrinsic evidence of intent. They're not, none of this is, definitive or conclusive or anything like that. And the courts, the administrative rule and the courts have been clear that these factors are basically, none of them are conclusive and that they all have to be weighed generally. And the problem that the bill is attempting to address is that providers in other states are using that as a way to market their service. They're saying, look, in an abundance of caution, you don't want to have any of these factors if, any of these things can count against you. But Representative Lincheski is correct that none of them are conclusive. They're simply things that the department and the courts can look at to try to look into the mind of the taxpayer and say, gee, is this where they intend to make their permanent home? And obviously the challenge is in virtually all of these cases, the taxpayer wants to prove that they're not intending to make Minnesota their permanent home because they don't want to pay tax on their intangible income.
And to that point, Chairman Chesky, you're exactly right what you're saying. There's no dispute to that. But I think we need to take it one step further because these are folks that have made domicile in another state. So they're not Minnesota residents at this point anyways. What's happening is firms that they built long-time relationships with over 20, 30, 40 years, whether it be CPAs, their banks, their financial planners, whoever, are getting short shrift because of marketing saying, you know what, the Toronto Revenue is going to bring you back in unless you cut ties to everything. And you know you can't do it for charitable contributions, but it's affecting charitable contributions. What my intent is on this bill, on House File 837, is let's just put in law, this is the way it is. They're not residents anyway. We're not going to collect taxes on them anyways. They don't have to give up all their services that they have in Minnesota, even though they're not residents of Minnesota. They still use CPA firms. They still use financial planning firms, brokerage houses. And so it's my intent to have this basically clarify that I'm kind of clarifying what's already there in a way, because you're absolutely correct. But I would like to lock it down and say, you know what, they can't use these specifically, these 26 factors, but is being used by Minnesota companies, I think, in a very devious way. And what this bill would do basically is clear that up and say, no, if they're an actual resident of another state, you can still give to the Guthrie, and I know they can't use it anyways, but that's what's happening. Donations go down. I had another talked to a person the other day where he's a huge contributor to Salvation Army on the board, but he's a resident of Florida, and so he quit serving on the board, quit giving. Now, did he have to? No. No, he didn't have to. But I think this just clears things up. Chairman Chesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that's, I agree with that. I mean, I think what you said and I said is at its core the debate. That, you know, what would be interesting to me at the end of the day when you do this, in which I assume will be in your bill and you work with the Senate, is, you know, what's the cost-benefit analysis? Because the value you're trying to do is have those Minnesota businesses not lose business. Totally agree. And yet on the flip side, the argument I'm saying is, you know, you just change these domicile factors, you're also going to lose a bunch of tax revenue because a bunch of people who are trying to game the system are going to, you know, get to. Well, they won't be gaming it. They're going to get to. And so we'll see. We'll lose revenue, no question. And so what would be the cost-benefit analysis? How much is the state? How many tens of millions will the state lose in revenue versus the business entity? Because the ideal would be to have the business keep their customers and the state not lose revenue. But that probably can't happen. So I think down the road we have to think about that. You know, my bigger concern is I'm now watching people say things that it's one thing if the public doesn't know the rules, but we need to know the rules. And, you know, when we hear someone say, I can't make a charitable donation in Minnesota or that makes me a resident, you know, that's not even in this. I mean, that's just right. Clearly wrong. And yes, you can. And, you know, but now we've seen an evolution in just a couple of years here where people are asserting things that are absolutely not accurate. And we need to correct them when we hear them because I get where you're going with this, and I think that's a good goal. But I don't want people, I don't want legislators believing that if we don't make changes, some of the things that our people are saying can happen because, you know, that'd be illegal. They can't break the law just because they're upset about it. So appreciate the conversation.
No, and your points are well taken. And also, I want to be very clear on the record that this bill is not to get folks from paying taxes. Out of paying taxes. If they're legitimately a Minnesota resident, then they go by the Minnesota rules, mm-hmm. Period. So that's not to get around or skirt. What I'm trying to do is protect firms in Minnesota business, Minnesota companies from losing business on a lot of things that aren't true, basically is what it boils down to. Okay, to the department, and if we don't get everything the department wants to get in by 11:40, we will schedule time next week. But please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
I am joined by the Assistant Commissioner for Individual Taxes, Ms. Terry Steenblock. Ms. Steenblock will provide some background around the work done over the interim by the Department of Revenue, and then I will give a response to some of the bills that you've heard today, Mr. Chair. Currently, residency in Minnesota is determined by domicile or day count. If a person maintains an abode in Minnesota or spends 183 days or more here, that person is considered a resident for income tax purposes and is taxed on their income. Similarly, if a person is domiciled here based on the longstanding definitions and presumptions outlined in Minnesota rule, a taxpayer is considered a resident for income tax purposes. Ms. Steenblock will now talk about our work over the interim as it relates to residency.
Hey, thank you. Before I go to Ms. Steenblock, I had on my list Chair Earhart for a question on the previous discussion. Did you want to make any
comments? It was on the previous discussion, and I think what's missing here, Mr. Chairman, is there's a perception. And that perception is not going right for the businesses and the providers in this state. And that's what you are failing to realize. It is a perception problem, and that's 99% of the problem here, whether it's a law or it's perception. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hart. Ms. Steinbach.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Terry Steenblock, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've done up until this point. Based on the discussions during the 2014 legislative session, the department initiated a review of the residency law, both the statute and the rule, and the department's application of them. Part of reviewing that, the department conducted listening sessions between May and December of 2014. We held six listening sessions with over 100 participants to hear about tax, banking, insurance, and financial professionals think about Minnesota's residency law as they relate to individual income taxes. We issued a report that included information and feedback gathered during listening sessions conducted with tax and financial professionals, including members of the Society of Public Accountants, members of the Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota Bank, State Bar Association, Minnesota Association of Public Accountants, and the Minnesota Bankers Association. The report that we issued included information on the department's listening sessions with tax and financial professionals. We talked a little bit about the history of residency, how the department approaches residency audits and appeals, how other states determine residency, and the department's next steps for the residency process going forward. As a result of the valuable information we gained through those listening sessions, the department is making several changes to our process for addressing domicile and residency. First, we will revise our contact letter and request for information. We'll simplify the format, reduce the amount of information we initially request, and include a set of common questions and answers taxpayers have about the audit process. Second, we'll modify our questionnaire to collect information in a more efficient manner. We'll eliminate questions we can verify through our research. Third, we'll modify our procedures and provide additional training to our employees to ensure we have a common standard approach to requesting and reviewing information for residency audits. Fourth, we'll revise our audit report to more closely reflect the intent component of domicile. Fifth, we will provide taxpayers and representatives with helpful tips for handling a residency audit. Sixth, we will update all website content and centralize it into a one-stop shop for residency information. And seventh, we will issue a revenue notice based on the current law and rule that clearly states the following, that the mere physical location of a CPA or attorney providing services is not a factor in determining residency, and the department will not look at the location of the bank account when determining residency. Finally, we'll update our existing fact sheet and other material to include a modernized explanation of how we use certain factors to determine residency. The factors that we'll include in there for clarification will be factor B, which is voter registration, and we will look at where you vote, when you vote, and how you vote, being absentee or in person. If you don't vote, we will look at where you're registered to vote. I just had to clarify that.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll look at Factor K, which is other professional licenses, and we'll clarify that we will look at the status of your license, whether it's active and valid or inactive and invalid, and whether it's for a resident or a non-resident. We'll clarify Factor R, which is the location of other transactions with financial institutions. We'll clarify that we will look at the location where your transactions occur, whether that be your ATM, walk-in, where loan applications are completed. And then we will also clarify Factor S, which is the location of place of worship. And we will look at where you physically attend church. And then finally, we will look at Factor Y, which is the location of schools that children attend and the tuition status. We'll look at whether that's resident or non-resident, and we'll look at how they attend school, whether it's face-to-face or online schooling. Mr. Chair, we believe that identifying the appropriate residency status of taxpayers is important for the integrity and administration of our state tax system. The changes I've outlined above will help ensure consistent, transparent, and fair treatment of all taxpayers. It will make it easier for taxpayers to understand how residency is determined for taxes, and it will reduce the time and effort needed for taxpayers who are selected for a residency audit. I'm now going to turn it back to Mr. Cummings, who will talk about some of the bills before the committee today.
Okay, I think that, but just a thought, if House File 837 was passed into law, you'd still have all the factors you talked about. We're just clearing it up for attorneys, CPAs, financial advisors, and so forth. Wouldn't the passage of 837 and being signed into law by our Governor Dayton, would that make your life a lot easier? Mr. Cummings.
Thank you.
Let's go on to you. And you know, I was at Hazeltine last summer, and I thought it was you driving through the parking lot with a scanner for license. But was that you?
Mr. Chair, I do live up that way, but that was not me. No, thank you.
Chair Knobloch.
Well, I guess I'm wondering, do you follow people around and sit in church parking lots, seeing where they attend church?
Ms. Steinblock?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knobloch, no, we do not.
Well, Mr. Knobloch? Chair, Ms. Steinblock, then how do you know where they attend church?
Ms. Steinblock?
Mr. Chair, Representative, when we initiate an audit, there is a questionnaire that is sent, and the taxpayer has the opportunity to provide us with feedback and information that we're asking for, and it is a it's an interactive process between us and the taxpayer or their representative.
Chair Knobloch?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I think some of the items, you know, make some sense in terms of the list. I mean, are you a resident or non-resident for tuition? But it does raise a little concern in my mind when the government is trying to determine where everyone goes to church. I'll leave it at that.
Well, Chair Knobloch, I was saying the same thing. When the government is asking where you attend worship, I think that's highly inappropriate myself. But Representative Petersburg, and then Davin. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, too. So with all of these opportunities to look at various things, there must be a department must have some sort of threshold as to how many actually have to be accommodating or be positive in order to become a resident versus non-resident. Is there any kind of parameters that you use for when that switches over from being quasi to actual resident, et cetera?
Mr. Chair, Representative, as Mr. Michael stated, it's based on the intent. There is no threshold for particular factors. It is based on the intent, and the factors are weighed generally.
For St. Petersburg.
So if that's the case, then what you're telling me is that it could be based on only one of those factors, because that may be the one that you feel is the biggest intent.
Ms. Steinbach.
Mr. Chair, members, we would not pursue an audit based on one factor, and the Maurer and the Larson cases as well demonstrate that there was more than one factor that's used to determine intent.
For St. Petersburg.
Well, I think that just kind of, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that just clarifies the question that most people have when they don't know how many it does. Do I hit it if I get half of them or 75% of them or only a third of them? And without clear parameters for the public, they don't really know. And so I think that's one of the questions we're trying to deal with here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petersburg. To Ms. Steinbach, the department has the fact sheet or is developing a fact sheet?
Mr. Chair, the department currently has a fact sheet on residency and non-residency. We would be looking to update that fact sheet to clarify or modernize some of these factors.
How do you respond when you do the audit and you ask somebody, where do you attend worship, and they say, none of your business? How does the department respond to that answer?
Mr. Chair, members, if a taxpayer did not want to provide the information, we can't force them to provide that information. We would look at the information that we receive in making our determination.
She's good. Representative Dabney, then to Mr. Cummings. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I did spend last week in Florida, but I didn't go to church or open a bank account while I was there. Or vote, importantly, it occurs to me. but I'm interested in kind of the dynamic of this conversation, and the dynamic seems to be, okay, this is the way the department is going to play gotcha with me. And I'm wondering, recognizing some discomfort with the use of the church or faith community membership, I imagine that there are people who say, you know, we got a cabin in Minnesota and we spend the summers there, but then we come back here and to wherever, North Dakota, and that's where we have our church membership. That's where I'm here in November, so that's where I vote, you know, in that other state. Do these factors serve a defensive purpose for taxpayers, for actual non-residents, to be able to prove that they are not, in fact, Minnesota residents and thus subject to our income tax?
Ms. Steinbach?
Mr. Chair, Representative, our goal is not to gotcha you. Our goal is to make sure that we're administering the tax system appropriately and that every taxpayer is paying the right amount, no more, no less. As we look at the factors, you know, we do have a section in the report that we issued that talks about different myths that are out there, and if somebody is simply coming here for vacationing, they would not be considered a resident if they were coming here for vacation.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, Ms. Steinbach, like you said, paying no more, no less. I just paid mine. It seems like I paid more.
Did you electronically pay it, Mr. Chair?
Maybe you should opt to audit it.
Oh, yeah.
I got audited twice.
I got audited in 1982 because I switched from being a school teacher to in the insurance business, and I, you know, had, you know, paid more in taxes than I made teaching school, you know, and so that threw up a red flag apparently, and I got audited, and they actually had to pay me money back because I missed a deduction, so that's kind of cool. Actually, it wasn't fun. It's kind of like eating broken glass or kind of scary. But with that, I'm getting notes that we have to get out of here for Rules Committee. So, Mr. Cummings, we're going to pick up from here. We're not going to do anything with House Bill 837 or 1393 now. The department will have full time to comment on the bills, not just the two that are left, but the other two that we've heard. But we want to hear fully from the department. I'm just running out of clock. So with that, don't stop believing. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.